Did you guys run into any problems, or was it only me? Maybe I tried the wrong number.
I didn't have any problems, but I'm on through the computer today, so instead of the phone.
Got it. I got the, this meeting has not started yet prompt and some nice music for a while. So who's on?
Let's Stan here.
Hey, Stan.
Hey, Rob.
I heard your voice.
Yeah, and I'm here.
Hey, Hot here.
We have a couple others on the chat list. Heath, awesome. Kelly.
This is Kelly. Yeah. I'm with the Learning Materials Development Working Group. I'm kind of hanging out and lurking and hearing what you're up to in case we can develop some materials that might support, or we can incorporate some of your ideas into the materials.
Wonderful.
And my name is my name's Heath Cross. I'm with State Farm, and I'm just kind of sitting in to kind of feel out how we can engage with your group, with the architecture group going forward. So it's just kind of a fact-finding mission right now for us.
Welcome.
Thank you.
So did anybody quickly go over the antitrust notice that's there on our meeting page? If not, just a quick reminder that there is an antitrust notice that's on the top of our meeting page things, and everybody should be aware of that. I guess Stan, we can continue our discussion if you're not already started on that, on our interoperability work stream.
Sure. I was just saying that what I've done so far to the, unfortunately, I haven't been able to do a whole lot of work on the document. It's been kind of a crazy couple of months. I finally added the short blurb on payment versus payment under the atomic swaps read description in the use cases section. And then as I started describing, I think right before you joined, Ram, that I added a section, anatomy of a use case. Since last time, it felt like the consensus was that we should kind of start with digging into the use cases deeper and then figuring out what the primitives are out of that. And so Leonard suggested last time that I could come up with a sequence diagram, so I did just that. And I feel it's very drafty, but I figured it'll be a great place to start just the conversations. I mean, I guess the more room for improvement there is, the more contributions we're going to have, right? So if you were to go in the interop doc to the anatomy of a use case, there is nothing other than that sequence diagram. And I can go over, I guess that would be my view how one would implement the use case in it, again, very superficial way, and really, really looking for feedback.
So what level of feedback do you want? Do you want, sort of sequencing specific, this is where the proof has to come in, and, this proof has to prove this. Number one, what are you trying to convey and communicate? And two, what kind of feedback do you want on it?
So first, make sure that the flow feels right. And then kind of drill into the actual proofs that are needed, high level. Then I think it would be, once we're kind of clear that the flow, overall flow is right, we can kind of go deeper into the potential implementations, maybe how some ledgers do it, or like an example, because right, you can do this in a variety of ways. There's no single flow that would, single right flow. There are options. So we can pick one and figure out what are the proofs that would be needed to support it. We can go into more detail on what kind of properties this proof should have. I don't know if that answers your question, Mick.
Yeah, that's basically it. The flow seems very reasonable. I think it's the devil in the details in what goes into the errors that I think is the really challenging part on this. And I'm curious as to how much detail we would like to go into. Do we want to design a protocol here, or do you want out of this just to basically say, hey, look, at a high level, this is a flow, and oh, by the way, there are several interesting places where we're going to have to deal with things, like the proof of existence turns out to be a non-trivial thing. Proof of escrow turns out to be a non-trivial thing. Proof of destruction turns out to be a non-trivial thing. So at what level should we expand? I mean, do we want to simply say, you know, here's a general flow. Here are the hard problems that the ledgers are going to have to deal with. Or do we want to actually go in and try to come up with some sort of details of how to do it?
I'm going to weigh in. I think it's fine as is. Do you really want to be explaining multi-party computation to people and commitments and like that sort of thing? Because that's what you're going to have to do if you want to go into the details of this.
I agree with you, which is why I'm a little hesitant to go any farther down than that.
So I think, at least my motivation was to see whether we have enough coverage in the primitives and, the proofs that we need in order to do any of these interops use cases.
The answer is right now we mostly don't.
Right, and I think that's exactly where it feels we should take this, because as Mick said, that even these proofs are non-trivial, but they probably have required more underlying primitives to implement them. And if our ultimate goal is to kind of provide a toolbox for different Hyperledger projects to to use to be able to reason about interoperability and what's required for different ledgers to support transactions that can cross the ledgers. I feel we should get to the point where these primitives are something that could be implemented. So they're specific enough to be implemented, not just as a high-level concept.
That's a little scary.
Think that's too much?
Having been working on this for the last several months, I think we probably can make greater contribution in articulating sets of assumptions that go behind these. So, for example, the diagram that you have right here has an implicit assumption that the user is highly motivated to be trustworthy, because the user is really the secure channel that's going between the source ledger and the destination ledger.
Yes.
And for this particular one, that often makes sense, but calling out that as kind of an implicit assumption helps a little bit to clarify. I think, again, sort of in the details of the proof of existence, we've had these conversations before that there must be a root of trust in that proof. And I don't think we need to necessarily describe what that root of trust is, but we have to articulate that there has to be a root of trust in this proof, and maybe list out a couple of examples, right? You know, Bitcoin, a ledger is the root of trust. In Indy, the trust anchors provide the root of trust. And each transaction can be a little bit different based on what you accept as the root of trust for the transaction.
So I guess Mink, you bring up a good point in that, you know, you can have a more, you know, trusted user-centric or client-centric model, and which is what I guess you're alluding to when you say that the end user is trusted here. And there are other systems in which, you know, you could have a more network-centric root of trust. And you know, as we flesh out the different interoperability, you know, solution patterns, we should kind of say, you know, what are the underlying assumptions and what are the patterns that that we can use, right?
Yeah, there are a number of trust assumptions in here. Even in this really simple diagram, there's a number of trust assumptions. Assumption number one is that the user is trustworthy. Assumption number two, that there is a root of trust for the source ledger, that is, the destination ledger can articulate a root of trust for the source ledger, right? And then vice versa, that the source ledger can articulate a root of trust for the destination ledger. All of that's implicit in this diagram.
So if we call those out, now the question is, what do we need to... You know, I guess we double click on that and say, what, you know, do we just say that this is the root of, you know, this is the trust relationship implicit here, or should we say double click and say on what basis do we establish that trust?
I'd be happy to keep it at a high level, because I think what you're going to find is that every implementation of it is going to have different characteristics based on properties of the transactions and the assets and okay. The participants.
So let's iterate, right? Let's just call out those assumptions in the first iteration, and then we'll see where we go. Right? I guess that's your suggestion, right? Let's just call out the underlying assumptions.
Yep, I think that's exactly what, that's a level that I'm comfortable having this discussion. Going down into solution space worries me.
No, going down into solution space, I think what we probably need to do is to call out the primitives that are needed for this use case. And, right? So I think that's the level in which Stan and I were thinking about. Does that make sense? You know, if for this use case, under these assumptions, these are the primitives that we need on the two ledgers, or on the client side in order to do these, right? So this function on the client side, these functions on the source and destination ledger. Make sense?
Makes sense to me.
Stan?
Yeah, that sounds good. I mean, I think maybe the more I'm thinking about it, I kind of agree with you, Mick, that if we were to just frame it in terms of these assumptions, so if we all agree that these three types of proofs are sufficient to support this use case, we can then say, without going into the nitty-gritty details, say that these primitives could be used to implement the use case under the following assumptions. I think we should be able to derive a kind of high level set of requirements, so to speak, for the implementation of the proof, right? So without going into how it could be achieved, but rather the expectations, what should this proof provide when implemented by a ledger stack. I'm still trying to navigate a little bit how deep or how high level should we stop.
Yeah. I mean, how much deeper do you want to go, Stan?
Well, the question about these assumptions, right? So how deep do we go with the assumptions? I'm not talking about the implementation of, but like, for example, this root of trust, what is, are we going to stop at describing what it is, where it is, or are we kind of trying to say more about its properties?
Well, what properties did you have in mind?
So, like cryptographic guarantees, like the, I mean, I guess for the root of trust is most of the assumptions are the everything you really need.
So, I mean, I don't think we want to describe anything cryptographic, right? We want to describe what it does, not how it works. And kind of the crypto assumptions are getting into the how it works, right?
Yeah.
So, and the other thing is, right, there are many ways to implement a root of trust, right? There are, some of them are very different from each other. So something like that, it's probably just best to say what we want out of it. Like, what are the functional requirements rather than anything else about how it works?
Yeah.
So I guess, you know, at the first iteration, Stan, why don't we just say, what are the functional requirements? And if we are defining function primitives to address that, what are those primitives? And how can we, just as an example, for the use cases that we've picked, compose a solution based on those primitives? And that need not be, that's just exemplary in some sense, right? So we can just check, hey, with these basic primitives, can we compose a solution for the use cases that we've picked?
Yeah.
And, you know, that might not be the only way to do that, but are those primitives sufficient to kind of allow different solutions to, you know, different implementations to kind of address those, right?
Yeah. Okay, let me get rid of this source stuff. Okay, so as far as the suggested flow itself, I guess there are no comments or corrections.
So, my overall question is, and you know, to you, Stan, but also to everybody else, for a simple asset transfer, which does not include an atomic exchange, can it be made even simpler, or do we need all of these? Are we convinced that do we need like an escrow, or, you know, I was naively thinking that, you know, you could just do we don't need an escrow functionality for a simple transfer, but you need it for an exchange.
Well, I kind of modeled the escrow to facilitate a certain level of atomicity, right? Which is why the newly created asset is in the escrow until a proof of destruction could be used to release it.
Okay.
Yeah, and which, as Mick pointed out, that mechanism has major assumptions about trustworthiness of the user. And I guess the assumption I made that is the user is kind of self-preserving, and it's their own asset, so it is in their best interest to deliver these proofs properly. We probably don't want to make any explicit assumptions about interpretation? Because I guess that's, well, maybe it's the other way around. That would go into defining the root of trust for each of the proofs.
And also there's, I guess, what is the identity of the user on these two ledgers? Is it the same? Yeah.
Well, this particular flow kind of sidesteps it with the assumption that the identity need not to be interoperable. I mean, I think if it is interoperable identity here, then probably more stronger assumption, stronger guarantees could be made. So as I mentioned, this diagram was generated by PlantyML, so you can email the source if you want to edit it.
So on this diagram, between the last two things, the last step that the user is doing, uh-huh. I assume on the destination ledger, there's a step in there that's like released from escrow.
Right. Yeah, that's actually a good point, given that proof of existence assumes existence. Okay, let's see.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing is, right, some of these flows are going to be happening essentially almost simultaneously, right?
Yes.
Like if you do commitments and stuff, but that's fine.
Well, I mean, there is a question of communication, right? So for example, this proof of destruction should really be delivered from source ledger to destination ledger. I mean, that delivery itself would make assumptions about interoperability of protocols and such. So if we assume that the user basically provides a secure channel, then there is no guarantees of the timing of the delivery, right? Am I making sense?
Yes. Sorry. Mute button issues.
All right, let me. I'm trying to update the diagram on the fly. See. All right, let me put the new one in. All right. There you go. So
do we want to kind of start laying out the assumptions that we're making here?
I think that would be helpful. I don't think I'm the best person to kind of describe these, but definitely start. So, you know, whoever is typing the assumptions, we kind of start. I started the presenting those above, but can move those down.
Yes, I don't know what animal I am.
So, I mean, I think assumption number one is that the user is highly motivated to drive the protocol correctly.
User is...
Trustworthiness is not necessarily the right word to use, right?
That's what, is highly motivated.
Why did you say trustworthy is not the right term?
The user cares about getting the asset transferred, but if the user can like steal $500 million from the blockchain, it probably will.
Yeah, exactly.
Is the user is highly motivated to follow the protocol?
The user is highly motivated to transfer the asset. They will follow the protocol to the extent that it's possible. But there are other users that could drive this. If they believe that there was a way to steal 500 Bitcoin, they would do it.
Yeah. So I guess the question is, what falls apart if the user is not trustworthy? What could they do, right?
We don't know, but we don't want to find out.
Exactly. It depends entirely on how bad your protocol is, right?
Transfer the asset because
if the user is trustworthy, right, then we could just say, okay, well, let's just
the user is the root of, if the user is trustworthy, then user is the root of trust for both.
Let's just let the user move.
That's not going to happen.
You know, it's like, let's just let the user move as many funds as they want from one thing to the other, right? If they're trustworthy, they'll move the amount they own, right?
Right.
Like, if you trust Mick, then if you completely trust Mick, then you could, merge your bank accounts or whatever, right? And trust that Mick would only take out the money that he put in.
Correct. But I guess I assume that
I assume that behind that is the, that's not true, right? Okay.
Yes.
Come on, Mick, we'll trust you with our bank account.
That would be a very bad idea.
So, coming back to that analogy, right? We are going to allow users to operate only on their accounts on each of the ledgers. Each of the ledgers is going to enforce that.
Okay, so now you have a notion of account. So you've got some more assumptions in here, right? That that assets are bound to the user that's initiating the transfer.
Yes, but if we trust things, right? Like we could just, we could have the digital equivalent of everyone, anyone can walk into the bank and open any, bank safe or whatever, right?
I'm agreeing with you, Hart, that it's trust is not the right word for it.
Yeah, this is not a trust.
Motivated to transfer the asset because that's what they're initiating. With an asterisk down there, which goes along with if the protocol allows them to steal funds, they will.
They're rational, not necessarily honest.
Exactly. Which is, that's an assumption. That's a common assumption we're making with most of the Bitcoin world. So it's not an unusual one for people to believe.
Unless you want to do cryptocurrency over proof of stake.
Let's not go down that path. It's too early in the morning. That's a Friday afternoon over beer discussion.
Hey, Rom. I think you're putting assumptions down underneath the diagram, and we're capturing assumptions above the diagram. So I think we've got this stuff in here twice.
Don't we love Google Docs?
There's not enough screen real estate to see both of them at the same time. So.
Did we lose Rob?
Hey, sorry, looks like I was talking on a muted muted phone. I'm hearing silence. I will yield the pen to whoever's having the green cursor, which is that anonymous iguana. Let me make the following assumptions on the ledger. So sorry, Hart, you were saying that the user is rational, not? You guys there? Can you hear me?
The user is rational, but not trustworthy.
The user wants to run the protocol, right?
Yeah.
There's another section above the diagram that there are more assumptions.
Oh, got it. Okay, wonderful. All right, let me then just get rid of this portion and we will work on the same section. So request initiate transfer of assets. So the user, each ledger is going to make sure that the user's actions are valid in that ledger's context, right? That is, they're going to make sure that they actually own the asset A in ledger A, source ledger. I don't think we need to call that out. That's not an assumption. So what is the nature of, sorry, go ahead. Is there some audio issue on my end?
No, we can hear you.
All right. Sorry, Stan, were you saying something?
No, not really. I was, following the discussion that maybe there's, for example, such a thing that proof of existence of asset A, do we even really need to request it, or is it, because there is an implicit assumption that the owner of the asset is the only one who's able to do the destruction, but theoretically anyone can get a proof of existence of something. The proof of ownership is something that would be tied to the identity. So, do we want to?
That's not really proof of existence of A, right? So,
it's either two separate. Proofs or kind of a extended assumption that you can only prove the existence of an asset that you own. Again, that which makes further requirements on the identity. And then we haven't talked at all about the root of trust for identity.
Yeah, and I guess do you need not just proof of existence of A or some kind of proof of escrow of A even, right?
Yes.
No, not in this flow.
Well, initially I had escrow on the source ledger, but then I realized that it's not really necessary.
Needed.
Yeah, because okay. In the end, if you're able to provide the proof of destruction after the creation of the asset, then you release it. But then if you're not able to prove that the originating asset has been somehow destroyed, then issuance doesn't really happen on the receiving ledger. So escrow is not really necessary.
Got it. And I think you raised a good question. Is it just proof of existence of A, or does it need to be proof of ownership of A? And then that goes to the identity question. And if you... At the end of the day, if we don't have ownership of A, all you've done is it's some kind of a denial of service, right? It's not like you can create an asset in B, but I think you have to address the ownership anyway, because how do you deal with the proof of destruction of A without that ownership and identity piece coming into the picture?
Well, the newly created asset is in the escrow, so the assumption was that can only release it from the escrow once there is a proof of, can only do that once, but I guess doing it without identity kind of is a very strange, very naive flow. It does imply an honest actor who we know don't exist. Does it make sense to add the proof of ownership? Or should we imply that proof of existence includes the proof of ownership?
Well, I think you need to prove to the destination ledger that the user has the right to transfer the... Let me be clear. The destination ledger will require proof that the source ledger has granted the user the right to transfer the asset.
So that probably could be better described through the escrow process, right? Rather than just proof of ownership.
We do it with escrow, but yeah.
All right.
And I will say we have found escrow to be an insanely useful primitive.
So sorry, so let me make sure I understood that. Are you saying that we need escrow even for A, or are you saying we just need to assert that the user has the permission to?
Back to Hart's comment about trying to avoid the house. The functional requirement is for that first transfer, right? So we say this request to issue with proof of existence, right? So the first three lines in the diagram. The destination ledger requires proof from the source ledger that the user has the right to transfer the asset. And that includes existence, ownership, whatever is necessary in that case.
So then does it make sense to replace the proof of existence with a proof of escrow and place the asset immediately?
I'm a little worried that that gets too much into the how. There might be other solutions that don't require escrow, for example.
Right, but like I was saying, this is an example flow, right? Just to distill some of the
privilege. I think as an example flow, it points out that one possible way of doing this would be to create an escrow in the source ledger. And the reason I say the escrow in the source ledger is because what you don't want is the user to initiate this twice for two different destination ledgers, for example.
That's a very good point.
So if I get a proof of existence of A, can I farm that off to two different destination ledgers and essentially run the same protocol in parallel twice and make a copy?
So just updated the diagram. I missed the part where it goes from escrow into destruction.
So, Mick, you brought up a good point in the sense that there could be alternate implementations, right? So this is really a common, I guess, are we settling on the use of escrows as common primitives that are needed for these type of transactions, or do you think there are other primitives that could be used?
The answer to your question is yes. Both of those are true. I happen to believe, based on the work we've been doing, that escrow is a very, very useful primitive. I also believe that there are other ways to do this that don't require escrow in the form that we are using the word escrow in our work. How is that for a diplomatic version of beats the heck out of me?
So I guess if we were to do it without an escrow, what would be the primitive we would use?
Well, you know, Bitcoin doesn't really have escrow, but you certainly have the ability to prove ownership and rights to transfer. And there are certainly ways that people have worked out something that is roughly equivalent to escrow.
Right,
Hart. What do you think? You do these more often than I do.
Do what exactly?
These MPC protocols.
Yeah, I mean, the issue is right that you kind of want things to happen simultaneously, right? You don't want like so. So really what you're trying to do, right, is you're trying to create something on the destination ledger that is valid if and only if something on the source ledger is destroyed, right?
Yep.
I think there are more requirements beyond that, but that's the core one.
That's the basic idea. So I mean, this is kind of the same thing, right? Is that like this diagram is a pretty good way of putting it, right? I mean, I might take issue with. I mean, the one thing I would change is maybe instead of create an asset and escrow it, maybe we create a new escrowed asset B on the first thing the destination ledger does.
Okay.
Because it it gives the impression that the acid is somehow in the clear, which it's not, right? But I mean, this is kind of, other than that, this is essentially how the multi-party computation flow would work, right?
Yep. There's some other things you could do slightly differently to optimize performance, but yeah, basically this
sure.
is
it. I mean, but if you were like writing out a multi-party computation protocol,
it would look a heck of a lot like this. It would
look a lot like this, yeah. So anyway, yeah, that's the, I mean, I think it looks pretty good.
So going back to your earlier comment, Mick, you know, whatever tricks that the Bitcoin guys do is functionally equivalent to an escrow, right? So do we use anything by actually calling it an escrow?
I would defer a little bit to Hart on this. Like I said, in our work, we view escrow as one of the core primitives. And escrow is sort of a family of things, right? But yeah, I mean, we view escrow as sort of a core primitive.
And I guess maybe we should just, as homework, see if there's any other alternative to escrow. But I can't think, you know, the things that you're referring to, you know, if, what Bitcoin is doing or what the Iroha guys were describing. To me, those are functionally equivalent to an escrow.
I would agree with you. I just, Rama, it's just one of those things. I just don't feel comfortable making a stand saying escrow is the way to do it. I think it's
right.
A very useful way that seems to be popping up in a lot of different places.
Okay. And I guess maybe we'll take homework to see whether there's a way to do it without something that's close to being functionally equivalent to an escrow, right? So then, you know, if there is, then we should mention that as an alternate mechanism. But we can start out with escrow and say, well, how far we get. Right?
Seems like one of the assumptions in this diagram is that besides the fact that the user is rational, that there is also a, there's not two destination ledgers, right? Because, I mean, the way this is written now, it would be easy to request to two destination ledgers, proof of escrow A, and then request to do the destruction of A, and then, hey, I've destroyed A on this original source ledger to two different destination ledgers. Right. So, I mean, obviously these proofs are things that have to correlate the source and the destination together somehow.
So,
yeah, you need like a two-phase comment, which is having information on locks on both sides, it looks like.
Yeah. And we've done a couple of these sort of fair exchange protocols to make this work that way, and I will say, for the level of detail that I think we want in the paper, this is probably good enough. We might want to add, for example, place A into escrow with owner destination ledger or owner B or something like that, or place A into escrow for B, just to root it into a specific exchange. But I'm not sure we need much more than that. I'm kind of going back to Stan's thing about, you know, this is not the asset transfer protocol. This is an example of an asset transfer protocol that should give us a framework around which we can describe the assumptions that are being made and what we want to accomplish with the protocol. And I think it does that just fine.
We should, I guess, add a little bit on what escrow means, right? Here we are saying it's escrowed for a specific transfer to be not a generic lock.
Yeah, and that, again, that's kind of one of the things that, I don't know if the Bitcoin escrow formats do that or not. They must have something, but all of our escrow work has a escrow to a specific identity.
And that makes an assumption, again, about identities, which we were trying to avoid, but looks like we can't, right? Because, you know, it's a specific identity tied to destination ledger B. I mean, destination ledger, which is tied to ownership of B.
Yes.
Which now somehow needs to be kind of...
I don't know that all the Bitcoin asset transfer protocols do the same thing, but I doubt very much that they avoid identities.
I think they all assume that the common user has the same key pair.
Or at least that the foreign key. Or at least that the foreign key can be bound to the local key somehow.
Right.
I keep updating the diagram. I don't know if you guys see the updates.
Yes, and by the way, we're at it almost out of time, but I wanted to say, Stan, this is a really, really useful diagram. Thank you
for putting the time into
doing this.
Seconded.
Thirded.
Thanks, guys.
I think it's a great start. So we probably need to just continue going down and capturing all the assumptions and then, you know, calling out the primitives that we've defined here, and also trying to see what are the other, you know, alternates that we could think of. And, you know, let's, a great start, Stan, maybe you can send this out on the email and solicit input on it and the email list as well.
Sure, I'll do that.
All right, with that, I think we're at 10. So unless anyone else has anything before we wrap up, I think we're done for the day. Any closing thoughts, comments?
No. Thanks a lot, everybody, especially Stan for that awesome diagram.
Yes, Dan. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone, for the input. I think we really needed this foundation that we can start arguing about.
Discussing. We never argue.
That's true.
We're all professional. I appreciate your optimism.
All right, guys. Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye. Bye.